Welcome to Between Sundays. I'm Tyler, and if there's one thing I've learned, it's to keep your cloak on and with you at all times in the Bible. Today we're talking prequels to Exodus through the story of Joseph, but before we compare Potiphar's wife to Jar Jar Binks, now that they've intended to harm me, God has intended it for good, so let's welcome in our favorite co-hosts, Maren and Barry. Good day, guys.
Here we are.
Hello.
Hey.
Hi. Good day.
My biggest question, we're going to start off real quick. Maren, do you know who Jar Jar Binks is?
An abomination. And I couldn't agree more.
Hey. You know, you're aware.
I have a husband and children, yes.
Yeah. My kids got into Star Wars in the past couple of years, and so they watched like the Clone Wars, like the animated part. Mm-hmm. And he shows up a lot.
Yeah.
And like, man,
Disney really tried to justify their decision to make him a character. Sorry, I lost my voice.
Yeah, Barry, are you feeling all right over there?
I feel fine. I just lost my voice. I was here 12 hours yesterday.
I love that you just were carrying on like everything's normal.
I should acknowledge it.
Do you feel okay?
Like a chain smoker.
I feel 100%. I don't know what this is about, so I promise I'm okay.
So we're just going to have to deal with listening to you sound like that.
We don't have to do that. We can keep this real short.
We have a 5.5 hour meeting tomorrow, right? Where we'll sound like this the whole time.
I'll sit back and pray. You guys can lead it.
Oh, man.
This just happened. Like literally at lunch, I noticed that my voice was leaving me. Yeah.
So you had a long day yesterday. Other than that, anything else? Like, did you go to like a concert or?
No, I was like, I preached. I went to the show and I was hollering and hooting and hollering and loving the show. And then I went and taught at Merge and probably sang at Merge. I don't know. There's no reason for it. Again, I feel fine. So,
okay. Yeah. All right. Well, we'll try to move past that.
We'll be all right. I'm sorry, friends of the pod. It's not the ideal, audio experience.
But. Yeah.
It's going to be fine. Back to the Jar Jar thing though. I had dinner with somebody last night who defended Jar Jar.
Oh.
I think among younger generations, Jar Jar is just okay. I think it's the people like us who grew up with the original trilogy for whom Jar Jar is an absolute abomination.
Yes.
I'm going to Google defense of Jar Jar.
There's a whole community of people who have created like a bunch of theories about why he actually is great. And there's a whole theory that he's actually like a Jedi master. Cause if you look at all the things that happen, like he never gets hurt despite his complete seemingly like idiotic buffoonery. He never gets shot. He never gets. So they basically are saying, actually it's all intentional. It's like like a drunken samurai, kind of kung fu type thing. It's just his way of.
I think it's his voice. His voice is what's super annoying.
The whole thing. Yeah. Is super
Everything
annoying.
About him.
Yes.
It's the way he looks. It's all of it.
Yeah. Maren, what's new with you?
I don't know. You're catching me totally off guard.
Oh yeah. I'm so sorry to drop that
every time.
Every time. I guess there's just not a whole lot new. I don't think.
I mean, you went to every show.
I did go to every show.
Of Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat.
I did. My son
tickets still available, by the way, for this coming weekend.
In fact, they are.
Gracechurch.us/theater.
And you also should go to every show.
Yeah. I haven't been yet.
There are nuances from show to show. And like I saw opening night. It was awesome. But then there were like slight little changes to the scenes that would happen on each performance I have seen has progressed in a way where I'm noticing little differences
like intentionally,
here and there.
Or like you think they talked about it after the fact, or is it just kind of,
I guess I don't know. I wish Amy was here to ask that question. If this is something that, you know, she's giving them points on. I think some of it is actually the actors themselves just kind of coming up with these little nuanced ways of delivering lines or things like that are slightly different show to show. And I love stuff like that. I'm totally noticing it.
Yeah. So I haven't been able to go yet. My kids were sick this past weekend and Lauren ran a mini marathon. And so I was not ready to go, but we're going to go twice this coming weekend.
Nice.
I've seen pictures and videos, obviously, and it looks really good.
It's like so
the
good.
The makeup looks great. The costumes look great.
The whole show is
so
excellent.
Colorful.
And here's what I'll say. Man, sorry guys about the voice. I listened to the soundtrack when we first found out that that's what we were going to be doing. When Amy told us that this is the musical we've chosen, I listened to the soundtrack and I was like, I hate this.
Yeah. This is a big deal for you. Cause you've been very skeptical.
Yes. But I actually have loved the show. I've seen it 3 times now and I loved everyone.
What changed your mind? Like what switched you?
They just did such a great job. It's like, It's like the best possible performance of a terrible musical.
Oh my goodness.
Just kidding.
Oh, tickets are still available. No, so we wouldn't want to say that till tickets are sold out.
I'm serious. It is so fun. And it's like, it's colorful. There's just surprises. There's like really funny moments. And it's just the way that they put it together. It's just excellent. And everybody, there's literally at the end of the show, everybody has a massive smile on their face. And I like have hurt my hand from clapping along.
Oh,
like
wow.
Yeah.
I have
on the other hand, Maren's comment on Facebook said you cried through it.
I did. Well, I cried on opening night. I've seen this show on Broadway in Chicago with Donny Osmond in the lead role as Joseph. And I saw Joseph for the first time.
Big shot.
With my grandma. I saw Joseph for the first time with my grandma who passed away about a year and a half ago. Mm-hmm. And so the show will forever remind me of her and that experience that we shared together. And she was a Donny Osmond fan. So just that, what a precious experience that was. Except I was real young and the scene with Potiphar's wife was especially spicy on Broadway in Chicago. It is a little less so. We have tamed it down for our purposes here, but that's something I will never forget sitting next to grandma going like, oh my, what's happening here? And then I saw the show in a community production where my mom was the narrator and she also was Potiphar's wife. So I just have a lot of experience with the show, a lot of memories tied to the show. And I knew that hearing the songs would bring back some of those memories and some of those emotions. And so the opening night I sat by myself, which was probably the right thing to do. Cause I just wept. I just cried. Yeah. It was, and it's happy tears, good tears. But I will say, having seen the show a few different times, both professionally and an amateur production community theater, the spin that Amy has put on this show.
Yeah.
I can point out things that are uniquely Amy. That was Amy's idea. Mm. And it's so cool.
Yeah.
Or even the set design that was all the mind of Ryan Mickens. It's incredible. I went home on opening night telling my kids the set is like one of the main characters of the show.
Really?
Just the set itself is awesome. It's so well executed and well thought out. The acting's incredible. The voices sound awesome. The orchestra sounds
the
great.
The dancing is amazing.
The dancing is on point. I was talking to Lori this weekend about the tango in particular.
Oh my gosh.
I texted your wife because I'm like, oh my goodness, who knew? Who knew you could like tango like that? And it's legit. Lori, as a choreographer, pushed them really hard to do like technical, excellent, like tango work.
I overheard somebody talking to my wife about the tango and she was saying she does community theater and she's seen this done a million times. And she says every time the tango is one couple that comes out and does a tango because they're the only like people who are skilled enough to dance. And she said her jaw was on the floor that she got the entire 12 husbands and wives or 11 husbands and wives to do it. And it's true. It's really, really amazing. And I'm so proud of Liv. She's unbelievable in the show. And I'm like, you were literally born for this. And her first time like on the stage was Little Mermaid a couple of years ago. Goodness. So,
and she doesn't have any lines. Right. But she steals the show.
I think so.
I think she does.
I mean, my eyes are fixed on her the whole time. So.
So we get this every time we do a show, people come to the show and they're like, I had no idea it was going to be this good. Like I saw a number of comments. It's like, this is an amazing show, professional quality for not professional prices, like $16 tickets. So if you've already seen the show, go again, bring other people that's kind of why we do it. But, we hear it every time. It's like, You hear that a church is doing a show or you see it on a social calendar or whatever, and you're like, lower your expectations a little bit, but that's just never, ever the case.
Raise your expectations.
Yeah. So
My neighbor Bill came, he invited two of his friends to come.
You're really old veteran.
Yeah. We could talk about that.
Vietnam veteran neighbor.
I referred to him as old and everybody gasped. Like
Of course.
And I was like, I don't know.
On Veterans Day.
Okay. True. I learned my lesson.
It only happened at 11. So if you're at 9:15, you missed the moment.
I learned my lesson, but I also want to just defend the fact that if you served in the Vietnam War, I'm sorry to tell you, you are old.
Barry, you're going to double down.
Yes.
I felt embarrassed.
Do you think someone in their 80s is not old? Is that not a fair assessment?
I think age is a matter of the heart.
I think our culture is youth obsessed, and this is the symptom of it. Anyway, he invited two of his friends to the show because he had such a great time last year. And at intermission, they were looking at each other saying, "Well, let's come next weekend."
Yeah,
that's awesome. Great. See it again.
Yeah, so it's so much fun.
Yeah,
it is. It's a shot of dopamine. It's just so much fun. I couldn't sleep after opening night when I went home. And I think it's because of just the visual spectacle of it all. Yeah. And just, it was awesome.
Cool. All right. I got one update. Well, two, but I'll share one because this is breaking news. This is hot off the press.
Like how many minutes ago?
Like 20.
Oof.
Whoa.
Oof.
So, all right. So it's a Monday that we're recording this and this will come out Wednesday. So this will be two days old by then, but. About 3 days ago, Lauren and I had a conversation with Milo saying, because his friend gets sent to the principal's office often.
Uh-huh.
And we're like, "Hey man, that's a line you don't want to cross."
He's in kindergarten?
He's in first grade.
First grade.
Wait, yeah, he's in first grade.
Already running with the wrong crowd.
Yeah, his friend just like goofs around or whatever. And so like, "Hey, neither one of us ever got sent to the principal's office. Like I've been through a lot in school and I never got sent to the principal's office. So if you go to the principal's office and you're in first grade, going to be a problem."
Yeah.
And smash cut 20 minutes ago, got a notification. Lauren sent me a text saying Milo got sent to the principal's
office today.
But I need more details. Cause I just had that one text and my only response was, "I bet he's crying. Like, I bet he's so scared."
Well, right now he thinks his life is going down the tubes.
He thinks he's in big,
what
big,
if he
big,
was
big,
falsely
trouble.
Accused? What if he's Joseph? And he's
maybe
just
I'm going to have
pit.
To get more details and report back. But, the rule, I guess, is you can't talk at lunch. And he talked at lunch. Like if there's any place to talk, I feel like it would be at lunch.
I had that rule in like second grade.
You can't talk at lunch.
It was really weird.
That's
yeah.
the place for socialization.
Yeah.
Prime
so I
time.
Guess the rule is like, there's like a couple minutes where you can talk and then you eat your lunch in silence. And then when you're done, you put your head on the desk or the table.
No.
And he didn't do that or something. I don't know, but he had to go to the principal's office. And I think Lauren described it more as a timeout than a talking to or whatever. Wow. So he just like sat outside the principal's office,
sure.
but he's like super scared. So I'm taking suggestions from friends of the pod. If you've got any like punishment suggestions for
first graders,
yeah, first grade, first time offenders that have been threatened.
You don't think that's punishment enough? What he's already experienced.
How scared he is. Yeah. He's like, she said he's waiting to tell me. Like he's like waiting for me to get
Wait till dad gets home.
Wow.
Yeah. She said he walked in and immediately told her like, usually he has nothing to say after school, but he was like super confessional, but
had to just get it off his chest.
Yeah, man.
Are you about to use the line? "I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed."
Oh yeah. That might come out.
The classic.
That might come out. So that's what's going on. Other thing, big ups to Lauren, who finished her second mini marathon this past weekend.
That's awesome.
She's been training for a long time and the rest of us in our family almost missed all of it because she's been training for a long time and she's like, "Hey, you guys should come see me run." And obviously there's a different, I mean, it's 13 miles. Like you can find a point on the course to see your person running. And we went to this. So I guess now like you have an app with that tracks your runner's bib.
Yeah.
And so people who want to figure out where you are and what time, how much time you're making up or whatever can follow you. And so we're like, "All right, this is the perfect spot. The roads are kind of closed, but we'll just walk from the closure to the corner of where she'll be running by." So we're standing there for like an hour because we know she's going to be there. So we're standing there for like an hour. We've got the kids all made signs ready to go. And, I'm following on the GPS. And the kids, we've been there for an hour. So they're getting, they're like
yeah,
over
really
it. And it's cold.
They're restless.
And so like Lou was holding the sign like upside down or like backwards. And I was like, "Guys, she's coming. Like get your stuff ready. Like pick it up and let's like put on a good face and we're going to cheer." And I'm like paying attention to them. And I look at the app and it says she's already passed us. I was like, "We missed her. You guys made me miss her." So I'm like, "I'm never going to live this down. Like the kids made these signs and we didn't even see her. So we start, I'm like, get it, get in the stroller. And we like roll back and we're running basically back to the car. And as we're probably, I don't know, 50 yards away, and I hear Tyler. And I look back and Lauren was there. Like she was where we were just standing.
So the app was
wrong.
Turns
out the app was like, she was like a quarter of a mile ahead of where she actually was.
Uh-huh.
I don't know how that happened.
Yeah.
And so thank goodness we ran back and she gave everybody a high five and kiss and all that stuff. And then they're like, all right, we got to go to the finish line because we got to congratulate her and we are her ride. So we have to go get her. Every road in the city's closed. Oh, and so the place where we saw her was like the halfway point.
Yeah.
And every road in the city's closed. We could not find a way to get to the finish line quickly. And so we showed up to the finish line. We parked, we ran over to the finish line, and we probably showed up a minute, 2 minutes
wow,
before she crossed the finish line. And so we almost missed her twice. And that would have been a disaster. Complete
you,
disaster.
You narrowly avoided disaster two
yes,
times.
Yes.
Good for you.
In the same race. Man. And
had she done this before? You said this is the
she
second
did
time?
It. Yeah, she did it. I think in 2019 was the last time but she's been training for a long time and did it. So that's something I would never do. So I was, as I was driving around, you see the runners like crossing the streets and all these things. And there are these people who keep pace. Like their only job is to keep pace. They're running the race themselves and they're carrying these flags that say like an hour and a half or anything. But beyond that is after it comes after an hour and a half or 2.5 hours or whatever. I saw someone carrying a sign that was 6.5 hours. And I was like, that sounds like the worst thing.
Worst job.
No, like, well, yeah, carrying that, but anybody behind that, like thinking about running for 7 straight hours.
Well, you're mostly walking at that point, right?
I don't know. The people behind that person were like running.
Oh, okay. So, I don't know.
That sounds terrible.
That's wild.
Yeah. So that was my weekend, but shout out to Lauren and I will follow up.
Well done, Lauren.
Shout out to Lauren. Big prayers for Milo.
Yeah. He needs them.
It's delinquency.
Gotta throw down the hammer. All right, guys, we are in week 2 of our series Dreams and Destiny. And it's about the story of Joseph, which fits perfectly with what we're doing this month at Grace. And so Barry, you picked up kind of where Amy left off last week.
Yeah.
In Genesis 39, where Joseph ends up in Potiphar's house, right?
Yeah.
And so that's where we're going to focus today. What was kind of the big idea of your sermon this past weekend?
So the big idea, I find that it's easier if I talk kind of quietly.
Yeah, there you go.
So I'll just do that.
All right.
Do you want us to match your energy?
No, please be energetic. just understand that this is not how I feel emotionally. This is how I sound because of my voice. The big idea really, I mean, it's kind of the big idea for the whole Joseph story is, God is working even when we can't see it. That's a very simple idea, but it shows up the idea that like, no matter his circumstances, we see the end of the story is that God's using Joseph, to accomplish his purposes, which are to bring healing to the world through the people of Israel who he protects, because of the work of Joseph. And so, basically that's the big idea. And our big response is to look at the life of Joseph to learn what does it look like to be faithful to God in the midst of whatever circumstance we're in, trusting that he's working even when we can't see it. Yeah. So that's basically the big idea.
Yeah. So basically the whole series, we're just going through the story of Joseph. We're just basically talking about his life.
I just revisited how much I'm going to have to cover on my sermon. And I was like, oh, the fourth sermon, suddenly it turns into like chapters, like, like a million chapters,
which is basically funny because I'm preaching this next leg this Sunday and it's 40 and 41. And I feel like that's a lot.
It is. And now I'm like 42 through the end of Genesis. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause this one, we just do 39. Right. And we're just like in Potiphar's house. And that's what's happened. And jail.
Anyway. Yeah. So we're walking through the whole story basically.
All right. So, picking up where we left off last week, Joseph's kind of flourishing a little bit. He gets bought by he was purchased as a slave. Yeah, so you're not really flourishing in that situation, but doing the best you can because you're purchased by a guy named Potiphar, who's high up in the ranks of Pharaoh's kingdom or whatever.
Yeah.
It says that the Lord was with him in everything he did as a servant. So Joseph's a servant for Potiphar. And something that was interesting to me that stood out, I want to talk about for a second. It says in Genesis 39 that the Lord began to bless Potiphar.
Yes.
And his household for Joseph's sake.
Yeah.
And I've never, ever, ever thought about that. About how God could bless other people for our sake or bless us for other people's sake.
Right.
That really stood out to me and I couldn't stop thinking about it. Is that common knowledge? Like, should I have known that? Or like, is that interesting to you guys?
I need to look at what the NLT is translating there. Cause I'm guessing that it's not, I need to look at specifically what it says in the Hebrew, but one of the points that I made in my sermon is that I think that that is an example of God's promise to Abraham coming true, where he says, I will bless those who bless you and curse those who curse you. And I think what we're seeing is Potiphar blesses Joseph with a promotion, you know, with a raise or whatever. I don't think he was getting paid. He's a slave, but anyway, he gets a promotion. He gets all this, he gets all this authority. He's living the good life. And as a result, God blesses Potiphar. I think it's just a one-to-one fulfillment of that promise to Abraham. We're seeing that. And we see that same pattern show up multiple times in the biblical story.
Yeah. That was just fascinating to me to think about, like, somebody who doesn't maybe know God at all is blessed by God for this other person's sake.
That's for blessing really God's chosen. Yeah.
I was reading on this chapter. I believe only in chapter 39, the Lord is, the author uses Yahweh as the name for the Lord. Mm-hmm. Wherever Joseph is directly talking about the Lord, he uses Elohim, God of power, Almighty God. But in this particular portion of scripture where Joseph is in prison, and kind of just needs to be reminded that God is, like, no matter where you are, Yahweh, I am, God is, he was with him. Yeah. So I thought that was interesting. At all the other points in the story, it's Elohim, but in this particular chapter, it's Yahweh.
It's also interesting because if you follow then through into Exodus, the people of Israel have effectively forgotten the name of God. Mm. They don't use the name Yahweh. And Moses asks, who should I tell them you are? And that's when he introduces himself to Moses as Yahweh. And so it is, that's interesting. I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah. And so Joseph's or Potiphar's wife ends up seducing him, for lack of a better term.
Yeah.
And
trying
Joseph,
to.
Yeah. Tries to seduce
attempted
him.
Attempted seduction.
I think the way Barry put it was bedmate.
That's like the literal translation. Yeah. But the commentaries that I was reading tried to really make it clear, like, this was a like forceful, lustful thing. It wasn't just like, if you would be so kind.
And I did think long and hard about getting that as a soundbite.
I think it's like probably
there's
best
probably
that you do.
Very limited appropriate uses of that.
Yeah, like none. That. Like
yeah,
not,
maybe
not
maybe not even today. So yeah, this is kind of a story about faithfulness in the face of temptation. His refusal to betray Potiphar's trust and dishonor God. Like those are the reasons you said he chose to resist.
And the fact that in his mind, at least the way I see it, like being a faithful servant to Potiphar, to him was being a faithful servant of Yahweh.
Yeah.
Like being the best that he possibly could be in the job that God put him in was the way that he honored God. And so I think that's just a unique twist on it, because I think I always was taught growing up that this was all just about like sexual immorality and like, you know, don't sleep around. But what I think Joseph is actually getting to here is that, like, I'm not going to betray God who put me in this position by doing something that would threaten what he provided for me, which is just, it's just not how we normally think.
Yeah. I was very glad to hear that we didn't make this a story about like resisting temptation or something. I mean, it is a story of that, but the talking about how it's a story of faithfulness and loyalty to Potiphar, but ultimately faithfulness to God. I was really intrigued by hearing the story in that lens.
And we skipped over chapter 38, but it really, the story of chapter 39 of Joseph's sexual integrity stands in sharp contrast to that of Judah in 38, who does not have sexual integrity. Right. And so really those stories are right next to each other to kind of exemplify, hey, Joseph was a righteous man, a noble yes. man, and did what was right in God's sight, while his brother did yeah. the exact opposite.
Right. Exactly.
When did you know you wanted to talk about this in terms of like prequel, like using that kind of language? Because you're right. I've never thought of it that way. Like prequels, obviously you have bits and pieces of the story.
Right.
Maybe you know how this is going to end.
You know where things are headed.
Yeah. You know how it's going to end. And this story kind of fills in some of the gaps, but it is yeah. that if you think of it in terms of like where we're ultimately going in the overall narrative of scripture.
It wasn't until I started writing it that I was like, oh, you know, and it really came down to two things. One, like, what makes the story engaging is that we do know where things are headed. If it was just a random story, I don't think we'd care that much, or we'd be like, oh, okay, now he's in jail again. It's like, wait, but how is God going to come through for him? How is God going to get the Israelites to Egypt? If we know that's where things are headed, it becomes more engaging. The other thing is just the recognition that came to my mind of like, Exodus is actually more of the, it's actually in some ways the first book of the Bible in the sense of when things were actually written down. And so Exodus being kind of the foundation story of the nation of Israel, that it's like the foundational narrative that kind of defines them as a people, and it includes the law and all of that. Genesis is put first because chronologically the story leads up. It starts with yeah. the beginning of everything, but it seems to me, based on the evidence that I've read and seen, that like Exodus is older. And, so because of that, it's just an interesting thing to consider. Like, perhaps there was a time where the Israelites had Exodus, but Genesis was hot off the press, and reading that story or hearing that story for the first time, they would have known where things, they would have known the original trilogy, but they wouldn't have seen the prequels.
Yeah.
So who's the Jar Jar Binks of the Joseph story?
Probably Judah.
The baker.
Oh, the baker. Yeah. Probably like the Nephilim or something like that, that you're like, what is this again?
All right. So Joseph seemingly doing well until the stuff with his Potiphar's wife starts happening. He's, yeah. but to this point, he's been abandoned by his brothers, sold into slavery. He's in a foreign land, and he's literally serving someone and being blessed in that work.
Yeah.
And as I've been paying attention to this series and the past couple of weeks of sermons, I couldn't help but think of Jesus in this. Mm-hmm. Like, so often we refer to Jesus as the suffering servant.
Yeah.
And Joseph, despite being blessed in his role, has suffered. Like, this is a story yeah. about suffering. And we'll find out later in the story, he continues to suffer as he serves. But what was that? And do you think that was super intentional in the writing of being like suffering servant mirroring?
Yeah.
Jesus.
Someone who's done no wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, I mean, I don't know that the author of Genesis had Jesus in mind, other than the Spirit breathing through him as he wrote, or probably him. I don't know. Or them, I guess it's a community. Okay. Anyway. But I do think that there is this theme that gets developed and picked up by Isaiah, who wrote kind of the most famous suffering servant prophecies, that's all throughout the Old Testament, of the faith, the ones who are kind of faithful to God's call, the ones who most dedicate themselves to his purposes in the world instead of going after their own desires, often are the ones who suffer unjustly or who face hardship or who are rejected by the world. And yet they are the ones that God uses as his instrument of salvation. And so Joseph's a very early example of that. Mm-hmm. But we see that regularly throughout the story. And what's interesting is Joseph is in some ways one of the few other than like Daniel, who is kind of like all to the good. There's other suffering servants like David, King David, who have kind of more of a mixed bag at the end of the day, where in some ways he was the faithful suffering servant. And then we see him go really far astray
yeah.
with like Bathsheba and all the other stuff and the murders and all that stuff. And so you generally get this sense throughout, especially the Old Testament, that there's this hunger or this need for when is the true servant of God going to come who can actually lead the people to salvation?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so Joseph plays into that narrative, I think, in a significant way.
Yeah. He's a Christ figure.
Yeah,
for sure. And his life in many ways foreshadows what Christ would do.
Yeah.
suffer unjustly, but ultimately lead your people to salvation, lead your people to being rescued from
yeah.
famine.
Yeah. And it's interesting too, to that this is all, I mean, this is all the Spirit, I'm sure. But if you lay like Philippians 2, I was just looking at that earlier today, on top of the Joseph story, it talks about Christ, you know, he was in the very nature God, and yet he humbled himself, even made himself obedient to death on a cross. And that's why God elevated him to the position mm-hmm. of great authority, where every knee will bow, et cetera. And it's almost like Joseph's story where, you know, he was part of the chosen people of God, and yet he humbled himself to being a slave, to being in prison. And because of that, yeah. God elevated him mm-hmm. to the place of great authority and power. So it is really cool to yeah. see those sort of echoes through the story.
Something else I thought was cool was like, the story is a story of being treated unjustly and suffering because he's trying to be seduced, and obviously, and she right. accuses him of this thing he didn't do, yeah. and then he gets thrown into jail. But on the front end and the back end of this story are verses about God's faithfulness. Mm. Like, and I have to believe that that's intentional. It's like God is super faithful to this guy, and then some really bad stuff happened. He got tempted and betrayed.
Yeah.
But God was still very faithful to Joseph. Yes. And yes. it's like, oh, I have to imagine that that was on purpose. Like,
for sure.
You're bookending this terribleness with, you're sandwiching it with,
yeah,
you're wrapping it in God's faithfulness.
Yeah.
Potiphar's wife has no name.
I know. Isn't that interesting?
I read somewhere today that I think in Jewish culture, she has a name.
Yes.
She's not named in our Bible, but they have a name for her. And yeah. I don't know where it's derived from yeah. or how Jenny. Historically accurate it is, but there at least is a subset of people who do have a name, mm-hmm. a name for her.
And as I was reading about her, what she risked a lot doing this, like accusing him of these things and like seducing him. Mm-hmm. What I read was, I learned that the ancient Egyptian punishment for a woman committing adultery was to have her nose cut off.
Whoa.
So, and that didn't stop her from trying.
Sure.
So I don't know why she doesn't have a name, but,
she in some way felt that she was above reproach.
Yeah.
Like, no one's going to take your word over mine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But just like last week, I'm intrigued by what this story doesn't say, because it never talks about, like Joseph never defended himself.
Right.
You never hear about that. Like,
mm-hmm. right.
I don't know. I if I was writing the story, I'd be like, but Joseph denied it.
Or yeah. yeah.
Right. nothing like that.
And Potiphar believed him yeah. because the Lord was with him. Yeah. No.
Yeah.
yeah. It is fascinating. Although having done as much like ancient history reading as I've been doing recently, the idea of political officials, you know, fooling around or being unfaithful to one another and sometimes getting a pass and sometimes not. And like, it's like Game of Thrones out there in like all of ancient history. And yeah. so the idea of this official's wife, you know, sleeping with a servant, like, I mean, it's dime a dozen stuff back then, you know what yeah. I mean? So in a way it's like, it's a big deal, but in another way, it's like, who's to say maybe this is not the first, you know, young slave that this woman has seduced. Maybe Potiphar was well aware, but the fact that it was Joseph, his favorite slave that has been doing such good work for him, like as far as Potiphar's concerned, Joseph did betray his trust. And so, yeah, I could understand why Potiphar's nose would burn as I pointed out.
And yet I read the punishment would have just been sudden death. Like,
yes, I did read that too. Yes.
So he doesn't, Potiphar right. doesn't just immediately condemn
right.
Joseph to death, which
maybe,
again,
yeah.
God's hand of sovereignty, obviously yeah. preserving Joseph's yeah. life. But maybe Potiphar knew his wife was trifling
yeah.
and didn't
yes.
want to completely,
that's
you know,
exactly. Yeah.
Punish Joseph unto
well.
Death.
Yep. Yep. Maybe he's just like, all right, fine. I like this kid. So I'm just going to,
yeah,
you just go to jail.
Let him rot in jail while I yeah. think about it.
And for some reason, he leaves his cloak behind for the second time in this story.
I know. You got to hold on to your cloak.
You got to hold on to it, man. And she uses it to frame him and lies on him, and Potiphar throws him in prison.
Yeah.
And she probably thinks, you know, that's that. He'll probably die in there. I'll yeah. never see him again. And other than it happening twice, is there any significance to him? Like to them, like, why are they talking about the cloak? You know, why if everything's intentional, why are we mentioning this twice? What's the significance and symbolism, if there is any, with this
cloak getting Joseph in trouble?
Yeah, he keeps leaving them behind, and he keeps getting.
Well, I think the first one was taken from him.
Yeah.
Right. And used as like a proof that he was dead or whatever with the,
by the brothers.
Yeah. And the second one, I don't know, when I read that, I see his, I think it's to show us how quickly things took place. Like he ran out of there.
Yeah.
It was a chaotic scene. He didn't even give a second thought to his cloak. He was just trying to get out of there. And it also shows her forcefulness, grabbing his coat in such a way that he had to struggle to get free from her and just got out of there as fast as he could. So I think that's why it's mentioned.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I also think too, so this coat, is it the same one? It's not the same color coat. Okay. But the colorful coat was like a sign of like favoritism.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I imagine this was like, was this a coat, cloak?
I bet. I mean,
status he's, symbol.
It's probably, so it's if like, he's wearing that at a, I'm sure he didn't come to Egypt with a cloak. He was probably just in, well, his cloak was taken from him. So he probably had to get a new cloak, probably got it from Potiphar.
So it's like, if those are signs of like favor. Identity or favor, and it's like, This is how I identify as a human. I have the status.
Yeah.
Even when that's stripped away, I can still be unshaken in God.
I mean, there's that'll preach. That's the idea.
Yeah. Put me up there.
Yeah. I mean, that your outward vestments of human worth are not actually what matter. What matters is God's favor upon you.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's good.
Another way of thinking about what you said, God is working even when we don't see it.
Yeah.
Just love that song, by the way.
Yeah. What? That's a song?
Even when I don't see it.
Oh, that work. Song. Yeah. Oh, you're right.
Yeah. Another way of putting that after that I was thinking about after reading this is like, no one can stop God from fulfilling his plan.
Mm. Right.
Because we all have a calling and a purpose from God, and no human being can take that from us. God is working when we don't see it, and no one else can stop it from happening.
Right.
Potiphar's wife is portrayed as the antagonist, I think, in the story.
Sure.
But her actions actually propel Joseph toward the calling of God and toward the plan God has for Joseph. They're not restricting him from realizing God's call and plan for him.
Right. Yeah. Again, what she had meant for evil, the Lord had meant for good.
Right.
Yeah. That was really interesting.
Oh yeah. It's so fascinating. That line that you just quoted that, towards, I think it's chapter 50 something. Anyway, that's the big idea of the entire Joseph story, where he talks to his brothers and he says, what you meant for evil, God meant for good. Like that's the Joseph story in a nutshell right there.
Yeah. Yeah. Over and over again.
Although we're in week two and I haven't read ahead. I'm not going to spoil it, but God has yet to speak in this story.
Right.
Directly.
I don't believe he does.
Like he spoke to Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, but he's not speaking to Joseph. Why do you think the story's written this way?
I think he's speaking to Joseph through his dreams.
Oh,
I'm doing a lot of studying about these dreams for this sermon coming up next weekend. And it does make you wonder why was Joseph so loyal to his God? He just knows the power of his God. I don't want to spoil next week, but the way he confidently tells the baker and the cupbearer and Pharaoh himself, I can't do it, but my God can.
Right.
He's so confident in his God. How does he know his God this well? I think he knew that his dreams, I don't think he went to his brothers and said, I had these crazy dreams. I don't know what they could mean.
Yeah, right.
I think he knew that God was speaking to him. And since he could interpret dreams, he probably to some degree could interpret his own two dreams that he had at the outset of all of this.
Yeah.
He could never have imagined that it was eventually I'm going to be Pharaoh's number two. I don't think he could have seen how the dream was going to unfold, but he knew that his God was with him And I think that that goes back to those dreams that he had. Anyway, so I think that God was speaking to him, but not in an audible voice or anything like that. I think it was in those dreams.
Yeah. That ruins my theory then.
Why? What was your theory?
My theory is like, if the whole message of Joseph is God's moving even when we don't see it. Like, God is literally silent in this story.
Right.
He is not seeing it.
Right.
You know, it's not just like, it's not just like bad stuff happened and I have to believe and cling to faithfulness, even though in the midst of trials, because I don't feel like God's present.
Sure.
It's like, God is literally silent when the authors are very clear to point out instances where God was not silent to Joseph's relatives.
Yeah.
And so he's very clearly silent. And I think it just reiterates and reinforces the whole, like, God is working when I don't see it. 'Cause he's literally not even in the story.
Sure. Sure.
The narrator puts him in the story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's with Joseph.
You don't have any indication that Joseph's hearing from him.
Right.
Unless
right.
you believe the dream thing.
It's right. interesting. 'Cause I actually went to two church services yesterday. I didn't have any responsibilities, within the actual weekend service. So,
you know, I have attended church several times
times yesterday. So yeah, Jaden and I went to visit a friend, at a church. I think it was LaPel or something in Fortville. It was just kind of up north. So we went to their 9 o'clock service, and the message there was out of the book of Esther. Mm. And it was the exact same take home of even when you don't see it, God is working.
Yeah. You could put Joseph, Ruth, Esther, Daniel, all in the same bucket. That's the same story.
Is it the book of Esther where God's name is not mentioned?
I think perhaps, that's Ruth.
Is it Ruth or Esther? I always get
both,
those two
actually.
Confused.
Might be both.
But anyway, it's this idea of God working through circumstances, not just behind the scenes where you can't see him, but he's working through all circumstances.
It's Esther.
Okay. That's what I thought. Positive and negative. So it just was really interesting to me that twice on the same day, you're talking about what you just said, Tyler, a story where God is not directly speaking.
Yeah.
But the whole reason it's in the book is because he's in everything.
Yeah.
I am that I am.
Yeah.
God is. And it was just understood that, this was God doing all of the things and making all of the things happen and working through these circumstances to spread blessing to the rest of the world and to redeem his people and bring himself glory.
I, for some reason, as you were saying that, I was thinking of like some of those movies with the famous movies with twist endings, and I won't say which they are because I don't want to spoil them for anybody, but you can probably think of movies where... The Sixth Sense. And you get to the end of the movie and you're like, wait, what? This whole time I thought it was this, but it was actually this. Like, I kind of think that's what these stories are like, where you're caught up in this, like, the drama of the unknown and the, like, oh, how are we going to get out of this situation? But that at the end, it's like, oh, you mean this whole time you were working, you know? And I think what these stories are inviting us to do, all of these stories that we mentioned, I think they're inviting us to just start assuming that there's a twist ending, assuming that we're living in a story that is going to resolve in ways we could never have dreamed possible. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that at the end, we're going to say, oh God, you were doing this the whole time. You used that to do this. Like, incredible. Yeah. I routinely imagine God, like, in the new creation, sitting us down and be like, hey, you got a couple hundred years. Okay. Let me show you this. And we will, because of eternity. And he'll be like, and he'll just like map out all the things that he's been doing through us. And here's every little detail that I used from your life to touch this person's life. And then look how this branched off. And then, you know, he'll walk us through the whole thing and we'll just be in awe.
Or here's how I was training you for this thing that you couldn't have seen coming. I was actually just talking to, I think I was talking to my son about this. I might've mentioned this on the pod. I can't remember, but I've been thinking about that idea, in light of my own life and circumstances that I've faced in my life. They went to a small Lutheran school, private school, which required a lot of parental participation. And so I was the school's janitor. That's how I was able to afford their tuition. But I was also the cross-country coach, track and field coach, music teacher.
Uh-huh.
Like, I did all these things that I was not necessarily qualified to do, but I wrote my own curriculum for music class, and we had a whole unit on Civil War songs, and we had a whole unit on the civil rights movement. I have my own music class curriculum for elementary school.
That's cool.
It was fun and I loved it. And I thought that I was doing it to fill a need in the school, which I was. And I was doing it to be present in my kids' lives. And, you know, I was. But now when I look back on it, that was my first real experience teaching.
Sure.
Yeah. And writing.
Yeah.
Writing lessons. Never in a million years would I have seen myself teaching in a church.
Right.
You know, to adults and not just children. But like when I look back at through my apprenticeship to Christ, the training ground that he used, I told my son it was kind of like the Karate Kid. It was like this wax on, wax off.
That's another good example. It's exactly it. Yeah.
When I'm writing, you know, curriculum for my Wednesday class with third and fourth and fifth and sixth graders, that's what I thought that I was doing when in reality I was doing that. And I was kind of just beginning to be trained for what would come in the future, the distant future that again, I never would have dreamed.
Yeah. I think about that all the time. It's like when I was in Kenya in 2005, learning how to like deal with cross-cultural differences, I never would have expected that one day it would be because Grace Church would be becoming a multicultural church. And I would need to have the skills to be able to like interact with people cross-culturally that are in my own congregation in Hamilton County. Yeah. I never, ever would have thought that.
Yeah. So I was encouraging my son, you know, things that you're going through right now or things that seem mundane or why am I doing this? You have no idea. That could be the very training ground that God has ordained in your life because he is preparing you for this other thing that is ahead, you know, for you and your future.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't equate it right now. You wouldn't equate wax on, wax off with some sort of defensive move in a giant karate tournament.
Yeah.
But
right.
So it was.
Right. But I think that's right. That was going to be my last question is, do you think he had any idea while he was going through this? Because it's not until chapter 50 that he's like, all the things you intended to harm me, God intended for good. So it's like, he's looking back on it. And we talk a lot about that. Like, how do we know, or how can we like push through? And it's like, well, look at where God's brought you and look at the promises from the past that he's fulfilled. And so one of my questions was, do you think Joseph had any idea in the moment that this is like, he understood his destiny, or was it not until later where he's like looking back on it and thinking about it? And I think what you just said, Maren, is like, that's certainly true. It's like what we did 20 years ago is probably preparing us for now, but we have to, I feel like it's super important to at least pay attention. And like when you're in the pit or you're in the jail cell, so to speak, like, where's God? Like, pay attention to where God is, because it's easy for me to get mad and maybe lose faith or be frustrated about my circumstance or whatever. But I think the journey is, for me, has been more fulfilling when I both can look back. My wife and I were talking about this weekend. We were just like, man, look at how God has blessed us the past couple of years.
Yeah.
And
delinquent child.
That was before the principal's office.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Look how God has blessed us. And past couple of years, it would have been really easy to miss all that.
Yeah.
But I think we were pretty intentional with trying not to in the middle of it, not just looking back, but in the middle. And I think it's both. So like, if Jaden's having a tough time, like, I really want to press upon the people having the tough time, like, as much as you can, just try to pay attention to where God is in your life. Yeah. He's trying to like develop you for something, but understand, like, paying attention to the journey part, not just looking back and being like, look at how far God's brought me or something. I think in the middle of it, it's just as important as like looking back on it.
I agree. I think that there are times where we literally can't see God moving. But we can know that he is with us. And sometimes in our own personal experience, sometimes that's all we have. I have no idea what you're doing, Lord. And I have no idea how this tragic situation can in any way be used for good, but I trust that you are with me. And sometimes that's all we have. I also think, we in our modern times have it a lot easier than Joseph would have had it in a pit, physically unable to see anything outside of, you know, his own chains or what was in front of him.
Yeah.
I think for me, when I am going through something and I can't see God's hand at work in my own personal life, I can see where God is moving globally or in somebody else's life. Right. And his faithfulness to you right now in your situation gives me hope for my situation, even though I can't see him moving in my situation right now. I can kind of lift mine eyes and see the situations outside of me and see where God is at work. And that encourages me and is wind in my sails and keeps me moving forward.
Yeah. And as I said in the message, there are, oh, my voice is back. No, it's not. Okay. as I said in the message, we have one thing that Joseph didn't have, which is because of Jesus.
No.
What?
I'm sorry.
You disagree?
The minute you said that, we have one thing Joseph didn't have. My daughter leaned over and said, iPhones.
We have two things that Joseph didn't have, iPhones. And also because of Jesus, we know the end of like the capital T story, the story, capital S story. We know where things are ultimately heading. We don't have to wonder how God's promises to Abraham are going to be fulfilled because we already know the answer and they're already happening around us. And we know where new creation is the ultimate destiny of everything. We still don't know how or when and exactly like how we're going to get there, but we know that we are in the process of getting there. And so because of that, I think we can have another layer of confidence added on to the trust that we have that God is working. We can also have the hope that that is given to us through Christ because we've already seen the end of the story written.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And Joseph, we'll get to this more next week, but he remained faithful. The tasks that were set before him while he was in prison, he just kept doing them. He kept doing the right thing, remaining faithful to his God. He gave his God glory when the two people in prison with him asked him to interpret their dreams. He says, I can't do it, but my God can. The interpretation belongs to God. He remained faithful in that season. And, you know, as I think about the conversation you and your wife must have been having, you know, look at what God has done and look at what he's brought us through, or just look at his faithfulness to us. The two of you remained faithful to him.
Yeah.
With one foot in front of the other every day, everything that was put before you, you remained faithful. That's the lesson of Joseph. Mm.
Yeah. I think that's what I'm talking about. Like paying attention to the moment, because you're right. Like there were definitely times where it was like, I have no idea. Mm-hmm. I can't see or feel God at all. But I can't believe that this is all he has for me. So, or us. So I'm going to keep the faith, I guess.
Yeah.
And I just want to encourage people to not look toward the end, but like try to find God in the absence or in silence or whatever.
And I do kind of feel led just to clarify one thing, which is that there's often an aphorism that gets used in the church of everything happens for a reason, that like God, you know, God's do. And so it's easy to think of like the bad things that God somehow causes those bad things. I do want to add the one little nuance that God works with and through the bad things to accomplish his purposes. I'm not going to go so far as to say that he's causing all of the bad things, because that leads to a really dark view of God, you know? So that's my only caveat here, is to say that when we talk about God working through all these things, I don't mean he's causing all these things. I just mean he's working through these things. That's he's working even when we can't see it. That's all.
All right. Where do we go next? Maren, you're preaching.
We're interpreting dreams, all the dreams, four dreams. that's where we're going. The next leg of the story is the baker and the cupbearer in jail with Joseph, and they've been troubled in the night. That's another thing I noticed. I'm getting way ahead of myself. Pharaoh and the baker and the cupbearer all seem really troubled by their dreams.
Right.
Joseph did not seem troubled by his dreams.
No, he wanted to tell everybody about
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Again, I think he had a confidence in yeah. his God. God's talking to me.
Right.
Check out this awesome dream I had. The others did not have God in their lives. Right. And they're like, what are the gods, little g,
yes.
trying to say? And yes. they were so disturbed. So next week, that's what we're talking about.
Do you guys have vivid dreams? Are you guys dream people?
I do. Yeah.
I do, but I really don't think that God's trying to speak to me through most of them.
No, I mean, like, I can barely remember dreams.
Oh,
ever.
No, I remember my yeah. dreams in full detail. lengthy detail.
Okay.
Well, love telling my husband about my dreams.
How about you share some of those next week and we'll help you interpret them.
I think it's going to be Amy here next week instead of me.
Oh, yeah. You're not going to be
because your voice
family.
Is going to be all the way gone by then.
I know that. And I'll be out of the state.
Yeah.
But right. Amy can come and talk about the show. And
yeah. And she
right.
has dreams. She's,
yes.
She's
she
a
does,
dreamer.
Yes. All right. I'll interpret both of your guys' dreams next week. How about
that'd
that?
That'd be great.
Yeah. All right. We'll be back next week. We'll see if Amy can join us, if she's not taking the rest of the month off or something because of the show.
Yeah. Right. But, she should.
Yeah. All right, Maren, will you please send us out?
I will. Do justly, love mercy, and walk humbly with your God.
And we'll see you on the other side of Sunday.